of Mark Hubbard, and she writes beautiful about the universal human, which when I was thinking about writing Edgewalkers, the subtitle that I wanted for the book was Global Human. The publishers chose the subtitle. This took me like 2 months to memorize, is People and Organizations That Take Risks, Build Bridges, and Break New Ground. I still wish they had just let me do the Global Human, because I think that that's just a beautiful way to summarize what Edgewalkers are up to in the world. And so I want to quote Barbara Marx Hubbard to start this call. A universal human is one who is connected through the heart to the whole of life, attuned to the deepest intelligence of nature, and called forth irresistibly by spirit to creatively express his or her gifts in the evolution of self and the world. Above all, a universal human has shifted identity from the separated, egoic self to the deeper self that is a direct expression of service. To become a universal human is to evolve consciously, choosing a path of development that has never been mapped before in a world that has never existed before. Mm. So please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you so much. We have had a few new people join the call. I see that Ellis has joined, and Tom, and somebody from area code 212. And we started the recording now, so why don't we go ahead and check in. And so say your name, where you're from, and anything if you want, like a one sentence about this topic of Edgewalkers as visionaries, and if it calls to you in any way.
Okay, this is Jim Stoner. I'm the 212 person who just checked in.
Hi, Jim.
I feel a little bit like Lazarus. I'm coming back from the dead now that grades are in. So I'm a human being again.
Well, the semester's over, huh? Well, did we lose you, Jim?
I'm sorry?
I said the semester is over, so you're
yes,
back with us?
The semester is over, and I'm just getting back to getting in touch with people again.
Great.
Wonderful. Glad to have you with us. Thank you. Someone else?
I'm Ellis, and I'm here in Fayetteville. And the topic of being a visionary is timely for me, because I've been thinking a lot recently about what I want to be when I grow up, and so it is very present, and all the different perspectives on it are stimulating for me.
Thank you.
This is Tom Anderson in the Kansas City area. I've also been away from these calls for the past few months, and so I'm just glad to be back with everybody tonight.
Well, and Tom, you just this past weekend did a vision quest.
I did, yeah.
So I hope that you'll share something about that tonight in the call. In fact, if it's okay with you, once we've had everybody check in, I'd love to have you start off by talking a little bit about that. We've talked about vision quests before, but if anything that you might want to share about the weekend and what that was like for you and others.
Okay, great. Yeah. In fact, the idea of vision was very prevalent with this weekend. I can tell a little bit about why that was. So that'd be great.
Terrific. Thank you.
Hi, this is Fran Levin. I live in Abingdon, Virginia, and it came to me very clearly recently that being a visionary is what I've been doing most of my life. And it helped me, it was very comforting to realize this. It helped me to understand why so many other things don't interest me, like history or things that are, that do not have, that do not lead into some new way of looking at things. That's really what
That sure makes sense. Yeah, the whole thing about breaking new ground. That's the way you've lived.
Yeah, it is. Only I just realized that it was a pattern. Isn't it funny?
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Fran.
I'm Diane Morgan.
Sorry. Okay. I heard Diane first, and then we'll have Lisa. Okay. Diane, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Diane Williams in Houston, and the idea of an edgewalker as a visionary, when I read it, I was just stunned because I never really thought of myself as a visionary, especially. But when I took that quiz that you have in your book, it was apparent that I was. And so it made me sit up and take notice and just really connect to the idea of an edgewalker, of being that person with one foot in the earthly involvement and the other foot in a spiritual realm. And to me, that's what being a visionary is all about. It's living here in physical places, but at the same time living in a spiritual place.
And that's the source of the being able to vision, stepping into that spiritual world.
Yeah,
beautiful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lisa?
Yes, I live in Bentonville, and I'm a nursing student. This is my first time on a live call. I've listened to the recorded calls. And not sure about the visionary thing, but I'm very interested.
and Lisa, you're also involved in our conference planning for the Wisdom at Work conference. And so I just love how you're getting involved. Thank you so much.
Yeah, anxious to be there tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. For people who are not involved in the conference, we have a face-to-face conference planning committee tomorrow, and so several people are coming to campus, and then those who live out of state are going to be calling in to help us look at marketing and program and logistics and hospitality and things like that for our Wisdom at Work conference, which really is a conference for edgewalkers. So I hope it's something that if you weren't thinking about, you might think about attending. Okay, who'd like to check next?
My name's Ed Williams.
Hi, Ed.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Just fine. And I'm from Houston, Texas, along with my wife, Diane, who spoke earlier. And I had never really considered myself a visionary either, but, you know, much like Diane said, when I took that test, I go, oh, my God, you know, I really am. And, you know, I think for me, I've been doing that for a long time because I've always have seen things the way they could be instead of the way they are. And then just following my heart in seeing that vision and seeing it actually start to occur, you know, and we're doing that again by pulling up roots here in Texas and moving to Fayetteville.
And boy, am I happy about that. Yeah.
We're glad because we are too.
Yeah, Fayetteville's kind of an edgewalker town, really.
It is.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, Ed and Diane are going to be here actually in just like three and a half more weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
It'll be really, really soon that you're part of our physical community here.
1st of June.
Yeah, not far. Great. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
So this is Molly Longstreth, and I live in Fayetteville. And it seems like a fair amount of my life has been either observing visionaries or, you know, participating in visions. And I also see, you know, sort of visionaries compared to implementers. And so, I don't know, I thought maybe that might be a little bit of the topic might come up this evening in the as we discuss.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good way to, one of the ways to learn what something is to look at what something isn't. You know, that helps to define more what the distinctions are. So that could be a direction that we go in. You know, a question might be, can someone be both a visionary and an implementer, or are they just such different ways of being that they're incompatible?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting question for us to explore. Great. Thanks, Molly. Glad to have you on the call, and glad to have you so involved in the center as well.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. It looks like John has joined us. Hi, John.
Just off the massage table.
Off from what?
The massage table.
Oh, that's why your voice is so deep and relaxed.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll work to talk, but I'll find out.
Well, yeah, whatever works for you. Well, we're glad you're here. So we're saying our names, where we're from, and the topic tonight is Edgewalkers as visionaries. And if you want to add kind of a one sentence thought about what that topic says for you, you're invited to do that. Or not.
Okay. Well, I'm John Rennish. I'm in San Francisco. And interestingly, I am having an interaction with a new business I'm starting with two partners. And we have two very different types of people. One is very high in the execute realm, and one is very high in the visionary realm. And I do think they can exist in the same person to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Conversation you're having with Molly.
Great.
But it may be rare. That's why it's good to have partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. So we still need to hear from Jim and Mary. I think that's it. Jim, you want to go? I know he's. Well, then we'll hear from Mary. Jim may be on mute or something. Mary, would you like to check in?
Sure. I'm Mary McDonald, and I live north of Boston in the town of Topsfield, about 40 minutes north of Boston and 20 minutes from the ocean. And my business is a social enterprise that I've started. It's called MaryMacMissions.com. And I'm championing health and wellness for long-term caregivers and care receivers, having been through that journey myself fairly recently, 4 years ago. And I'm an Enneagram number 4. And part of my question is, I'm finding myself explaining myself to others as, because I'm a number 4, I'm seeing what's missing here, and therefore I've created it. And, you know, for some people in the spiritual realm, I've just been to 2 conferences, Spiritual Directors International and another group of spiritual directors, another conference for spiritual directors, And people in those circles understand a little bit more, you know, if I explain myself as an Enneagram number 4 and I see what's missing and therefore I create it. But many other people who are more conventional or who aren't tuned in to some of these spiritual conventions, for example, I'm in the third year of developing this business, and I'm now trying to just let people know that it exists. And I spoke with a very senior marketing person in my local area here recently about, hey, I'm just starting to launch coaching services, and how do I get the word out? And he said, well, Mary, he just looked at what I was doing, and he just thought I was just so visionary that it was very hard to market what I was trying to do. So I'm really curious, because I am a visionary and an implementer. I basically follow Bill Torbert's action inquiry method in pretty much everything that I do. And I'm really curious about, you know, how we as visionaries are able to communicate more tangibly, you know, what we're offering or what we're doing.
Great, great questions. And we have some people on this call, John Rennish particularly comes to mind, and actually Jim Stoner too. Actually, several people, as I look at my list here, so many people who have been wrestling with that question about how to communicate what we have to offer when we're visionary, and how to have people see the value of that and want to get involved. So that's a good question for us to explore as well. So thank you for that. Before we get into that, I just want to check in again with Jim Stoner. Jim, are you still with us?
I'm sorry, I'm still here. I've my speakerphone doesn't have, the microphone doesn't work, and I forget that now and then. So there'll be a little delay. So actually, I may have commented earlier. You may not have heard me. I may have thought the speakerphone was working.
No, we didn't hear you. So if you'd like to check in.
Yeah, well, I'm Jim Stoner. I'm in New York City. Actually, the thing I'm thinking about most at the moment is I'm going to be in Madrid with a few folks interested in spirituality and research and sustainability. And I'm trying to come up with what I think might be some good research questions to be done at universities about spirituality and sustainability. So if anybody has any hot ideas on that, I'm sure we can link it to visionary folks and edgewalkers and stuff. But that's not till July, so I have some time to think about it.
Yeah, great question. All right, yeah. I can think of some right off the top of my head. You know, and one of the things we've talked about, Jim, is if leaders had a stronger spiritual life or have the opportunity to have visioning experiences, you know, for instance, like Tom Anderson, who takes people on vision quests, if people have those kinds of experiences, does it alter their sense of oneness with the environment and therefore affect their business decisions?
Interesting. Thank you.
And one example of that, that would be a yes answer, is the Lakes Project at Xerox. There's an internal publication called the Lakes Project by John Elter, E-L-T-E-R, and a couple of other folks. And they had a consulting group that took all 300 employees over time for a week in nature that included a 24-hour fast and vision quest and solo experience in nature, to where people asked, where, you know, they had their vision quest questions about what was next for them on their journey, but also a vision for the organization. And what came out of that experience was the inspiration to create the first cradle-to-grave document center that was totally sustainable. because people felt such a connection to nature, they wanted their company to be much more committed to sustainability and to making things in a green way.
Hmm.
So that's, you know, a one case study example that makes me have the hypothesis that if we could get folks out into nature more, it would change their decision making.
Mm-hmm. Thank
that
you.
Would be my hope. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, everyone. Somehow I lost the call. So I'm back. So I just want to say a couple of things about Edgewalkers as visionaries. And when I interviewed business leaders who had a strong spiritual life and who were very effective in business, one of the qualities I found was that they had the ability to vision the future and actually would have many of them literally have visions, mystical experiences where they would see things, and it's not always a seeing process, see, sense, feel, hear, get messages, but they would have a transcendent kind of experience that would guide them to in their decision making. And in interviewing them is that the propensity to have those kinds of experiences is directly connected to an interest in the future. They're just future oriented. Their sense of when they relate to time, they have not too much interest in the past. You know, the past is gone, it's done, what has been, let's move on. And like Fran was saying, you know, she realizes she's always thinking about the future and has always been looking ahead into what hasn't yet existed. And I think it was Mary who was saying the ability to see what doesn't exist, what's missing, and then be able to provide it. So it's looking into space, this desire to look into a space, whether you call it the future or maybe just even an emptiness around what's missing, and ask questions along with a spiritual practice or a commitment to spiritual values tends to create this ability. Not everyone has it, but, you know, just not the people I'm interested in and like to learn from are the ones that just seem to have this sense of knowing about the future. John Renish has been for years one of the key sounding boards for me when I might sense something is unfolding in the future and I have a question about patterns and trends. And John, I love to call you up and say what I'm thinking about or what I think might be happening, what do you see? And it's just always so inspiring and delightful to have that kind of conversation with you because it inevitably you've been looking in that direction and see things that I don't see and enrich my own sense of vision. And you call yourself a futurist. And so that's, you know, just so much a part of Edgewalker's way of being. So I said, and as we were doing our introductions, that I'd like to invite Tom Anderson to share a little bit about the Vision Quest experience that he facilitated this past weekend. And about 3 weeks ago, he did one for our students and staff at the university, just kind of a mini Vision Quest. But Vision Questing is an institutionalized and kind of ritualized, effective practice that exists in many kinds of traditions that is a way that can help people to get clearer about visions and about the future. So, Tom, I'd like to turn it over to you and have you share some things. And you were talking about how the vision really came up this weekend. This idea of visioning was really central. So,
Judy, before Tom says anything, this is John. I forgot to tell you I may have to leave early. So if I drop off, don't feel like I was rude and hung up.
Okay.
So, same with you, Tom. If you're talking and I drop, it doesn't mean you're boring.
Okay, John. Nice to hear your voice, John. Very mellow this evening after your massage there.
Yes.
More so than usual, even. I don't want to take up too much time because this is a subject that I could really do that with. But what I did this weekend, the full vision quest programs that I lead are like 9-10 day wilderness experiences, but I also offer a weekend program, and that's what happened this past weekend. And one of the tools that we use in the tradition and the approach that I take and those that I work with at Rites of Passage, which is a nonprofit organization that does these things, is a tool called the Four Directions Wheel. And it's sometimes called a medicine wheel. And it's divided up into four directions based on the cardinal directions of the compass, north, east, south, and west. And each direction has a multitude of meanings. But we place in the east, what we call the east shield, or the east direction, is where we place vision. And it's the place of the spirit aspect of a person. And in the way we describe it, vision is in the east shield that's associated with vision is the place where there is no separation. There's no difference between the profane and the sacred. It's a place where it's a place that represents both the ending of life and the beginning of life, and actually even recognizes that there's no difference between those two things. You know, so it's this place of weightlessness and in vision. We often talk about a kind of a totem animal associated with that as the eagle that can kind of fly over everything and has this ability to see everything from this lofty height. And without talking a whole lot about the whole wheel, I just want to contrast that with the west of the wheel, which is on the opposite side from the east where vision is. On the west is the land of the soul. And it's the space, it's the place of individuation. So if the east is the allness of everything, where all of us and every form of life is connected and one, then the west, and this kind of starts to lean into this question about implementers a little bit too. The west is the place that's associated with out of everything there is, out of all possibilities of the east, what is uniquely mine to do? What is it that's my particular gifts at this particular time in history and in my life? What did I come into this existence bearing? What gift did I bring? And all. And there's a quote from Black Elk, the Lakota Sioux holy man, that he's in one of the books that was written about his life. He says, a vision has no power until it's been performed on the earth for the people to see. Which is kind of reflected in that east shield, west shield, vision versus soul, you know, allness versus individuation sort of dynamic there. And so I was really thinking about that as some of the people were talking about this idea of vision. And really the one of the goals or one of the hoped for outcomes of the Vision Quest program is coming to a sense of balance, experiencing each of those two directions, plus the other two, south being the body and north being the mind, but coming to a place of balance in all these things, but also being able to access those aspects of ourselves, being able to access vision. You know, sometimes we have people that come in from in our full program as a 3-day solo and fast, and they have had an experience that they're just kind of out there. They're just it's almost as if they've left their bodies. They're physically there, but they're talking about just these grand dreams and designs. And part of our role as Vision Quest guys is to kind of get their feet back on the ground a little bit too, so that they can take something home with them that they can start, you know, actually using in their lives and in the world in some sort of service. So that's I think that's what I'd like to add to the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tom. That really pulls together a lot of the themes that people have talked about on this call tonight so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of our first questions on the list I sent is, what enhances our ability to envision the future? And so I'd love to hear from any of you that want to comment on that, that, you know, several of you have said you notice that you accept and are aware that you are visionary. And by visionary, that means having visions, having a vision of the future, having a vision of how to make things better. And all of you, to my knowledge, have taken your visions and done concrete things with them. So in what ways, or what is it that enhances your ability to envision the future? Anything that you share might inspire someone else. Love to hear from you.
Well, I don't know if it's something I do, Judy. This is John again. But I think what I see a lot of people who don't choose to envision a better future is they don't think it's possible. So part of it is eliminating any doubt that that kind of a future is possible that you're trying to create, that you want, would like to create, and it's not just a fantasy. If you don't think it's possible, then it's just fantasizing. But if you are, and I'll speak for myself, I've had this vision that I know the world could be better than it is and people could be doing better than they're doing. I've had that inner knowing for 30 years. So there's no doubt that I know we can do that, that we can have a better future. Now, does that mean I'm creating it? No, but it's if I didn't think it was possible, I'd be, you know, wasting my time. And I think that's where a lot of people are, is they've gone cynic, basically, and figure they're doing the best.
Given up hope?
Well, they're doing the best they can, given what's possible. They have a limit on their on what they see as possible.
Well, what is it that keeps you? Okay, go ahead, Fran. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Fran. I have to say that I hear so many talks about how consciousness is evolving, and you know, Barbara Marx Hubbard, for example, says our crisis is a birth. And there is a website, Birth 2012. I mean, they had a conception day where many things were going on, and now they're planning this Birth 2012 in December. And all of this involves a new consciousness, seeing things in a new way. And one of the, I used to envision, because I was a nurse, a new healthcare system, you know, things like that. But now the possibilities are so much more. I don't think there's any reason to be discouraged. Actually, there is one website, integralenlightenment.com, and if you click on audio, you can hear so many talks about how things are changing and how we can get involved and how we can choose to focus on this new way of looking at things, a new way of being. It's just extraordinary.
Wow, I haven't heard about enlightenment. That's got to be, is that connected to
Craig
Ken Wilber or Andrew Cohen?
Well, Andrew Cohen has one. He has Enlightened Next, but this integralenlightenment.com is Craig Hamilton. He lived with in Andrew's community for several years, and he edited the magazine, but then he went off on his own. I mean,
fabulous.
He still recognizes Andrew, but he's doing something else.
Uh-huh.
And I think his talks, listening to his talks. They're really extraordinary. I really recommend
thank you
it.
For that. Yeah, thank you for that reference.
Yeah.
So, Wendy Goodman, it looks like Wendy Goodman just joined us.
Hello, yes, I did.
Hi, Wendy. Fran Levin was just talking about a website called integralenlightenment.com and some inspiring audios. The context for her offering that is we're asking questions about visionaries and how people, what enhances our ability to envision the future. And John Renish said that one of the things, I think a critical element to envisioning the future is actually having the belief that a better future is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been kind of talking about I guess in a way it's like, well, what is the evidence or where are the ideas or things that give us hope that
uh-huh.
would encourage us to help believe in a better future and put energy into it?
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of trying to bring you up to date.
Thank you so much. That was so succinct, and I'm right there with you. Thank you.
Terrific. I have to say that one of the things that really shifted my consciousness about the better future, for me, I've always envisioned it. I can even remember being 8 years old and having a vision of a world where everyone had enough and everyone shared. And, later when I learned about socialism, I said, well, I already invented that. from each according to, I forgot what the phrase is, of what they have to those who have need. And so I think I started quite young on having a vision for a better world. But, after a while, you get so cynical when it's easy to, especially the more you listen to the news or read the news. And then I saw a TED.com video by a fellow named Steven Pinker. Mm-hmm. And the title of the video is The Myth of Violence.
Mm.
And he's a Harvard professor, and he just goes through the facts about over the last 10,000 years how violence in the human race has declined, and then over the last 100 years how it's declined, and over the last 10 years how it's declined. And he provides multiple forms of evidence that he's just talking about we're less violent, but what Fran is saying, for me, it provides evidence that we're getting more conscious, more compassionate. But he explains in sociological and historical terms how the human race has changed in a measurable way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so counter to what the news would have us believe. And that just gave me a tremendous amount of it's not just a hope, it was just, I guess, reinforcement for my sense that we are evolving, that the world can get better. It does continue to take conversations like this and individual and collective action. But if we don't believe it, we're not going to act, as John was pointing to. So anyone else have thoughts about that? And because I can throw in my next question, but I want to see the question of what enhances our ability to envision the future.
Judy, this is Mary. And in my recent interactions with coaching clients, I've been amazed at how in the process of coaching, they can state what they envision as their reachable future, and just within 2 to 3 weeks, they are realizing what they have stated as this is my vision for how I see my life being better. And that's on a very personal level, but I think one of the key things that enhances our ability to envision the future is seeing goals that are very reachable and very doable, and then trying those out, and then seeing that, hey, I can make this little bit of time in my schedule for meditation, or I can make the phone call to the person that I really want to reach and have amazing conversation.
Thank you, Mary. That's really the bridge between the vision and the action. And it's a real key to, if someone has a vision, even if it's a small vision to begin with, what you're saying is if there's a concrete action they can take that moves them forward, then they can begin to get more and more clear about other visions and bigger actions. I'm extrapolating from what you're saying, but would that feel true to you?
Absolutely, yes. I believe that in little actions that they're able to take, then they believe more in what bigger visions are.
Mm-hmm.
That this is Molly. That method sounds very familiar to me because John Wesley in his small circles, had people answer 8 questions every week. And also in base community groups, people were sort of answering these same questions. And part of it is, now they may not have been so visionary. I mean, I'm sure some were and some weren't, but they wanted to change some part of their life, so they committed to taking some action during the week, and then the next week, the other people in the group, I'm sure this varied as lovingly as possible, asked them about the steps that they took. And in that way, they were encouraged to move forward on their vision, as it were. Whether they're a mother whose child became missing, or, in a base community group, or someone in one of John Wesley's circles who wanted to drink less gin or something like that.
Yeah. So a common theme in what I hear both of you saying is that there's a way of being accountable, whether it's to your coach or to a supportive circle, but in some way, something outside of you that you're going to report into and that's going to be there in a supportive way to see if you've taken those actions that you've committed to.
I guess as a community, we could help each other reach our visions help them come into being.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe...
And even help clarify them.
Yeah, maybe visions become reality in community. I don't know.
That sounds like a piece of poetry to me, Molly. That's beautiful. Yeah, and maybe just without community, it may be awfully difficult to do something that has an impact on others besides oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And even personal growth without community is awfully difficult.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. Okay, someone else wanted to.
Yeah, this is Wendy.
Yes, Wendy.
I think I'm loving the conversation. And I think that there's another piece of really being granted the gift of sitting and envisioning and having that kind of reflection and seeing what are the limiting beliefs around that are blocking that realization. But part of what community can offer is time to really sit in the question.
Yes, what? I'm sorry, I didn't get that last part.
I said sit in the question. There's a piece of the action, but there's also a lot of people don't have a vision. They don't envision the future. And a lot of folks, when they do go to envision the future, they envision something that's right in front of them. And I think the time for deep reflection that helps guide what is it that I truly do envision, then all these other steps are critical. But I think critical to the process is really taking the time to explore what is that vision and what's getting in the way of you realizing it now.
Yeah, so if I could summarize, then a couple of elements that really help someone to vision, especially in community, then would be silence, holding the space, taking the time.
And
to
asking
ask the
question.
Mm-hmm.
and asking the question.
Yeah. And then the listening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The waiting, the asking the question and the waiting in the question.
Mm-hmm.
There's this wonderful quote that I can just came across today. Do you have a minute?
Yes, go ahead.
I need to find it. I'll find it very quickly, though. It's about living in the question and what that, I'm pretty sure it's right here. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live among some distant day into the answer. And that's a Rainer Maria Rilke. So I think that we've got to be willing to sit in the question.
Yeah. And have some patience. I mean, there's so many people I've talked to who are trying to find their vision, find what's calling them, and they, you know, it's like they could touch it, taste it, feel it almost, but it feels just out of reach. And it's so hard to have the patience. But if you don't take the time and reflect, it's going to take even longer.
Right.
So you have to sit in the question rather than ask it and then 3 months later go, oh, well, I never got that answer, but, you know, never
paying
attention.
Well, you journey at the same time. You do all the other things at the same time, but you continue to ask the question.
Yeah, yes.
So we keep getting information back from the community and from the actions and whatever that inform the vision, but that there's got to be really made that space to really sit in the question and,
yeah,
and assess it. So that's my contribution.
Thank you. Could you email that to me, Wendy, and I'll put that, because I saved the recording of the call and put it on the website, and it'd be fun to just put the quote right underneath our copy of the recording.
Sure. I'll send it to you.
Thank you. So a question, or a couple of questions that I sent out that would be fun to explore are, what are the joys and costs of being a visionary? I'll just start up with a short story myself. This is Judy now, and I was once at the Center for Creative Leadership at a workshop, and we were asked to create an imaginary world leader and, you know, what they would do for the world, and we were supposed to sell the rest of the team on why our leader should be world leader rather than theirs. And I created a world leader based on the Sonoy Indian dreaming culture, which is the healthiest, most peaceful, most creative, no mental health issues whatsoever kind of culture out of Indonesia, and talked about how if this world leader was in charge and we used dreaming as a part of our culture, you know, and all this beautiful stuff. And I got laughed out of the room, and I was later told by, there was a coach that was observing us, that I was later told, you really ought to rethink about whether or not you want to have a career in business. So, you know, for me, one of the costs of being visionary is that you could be perceived as so on the fringe that you're not valued, not listened to, you know, not able to make a contribution. But there are certainly joys of being a visionary when you can create a vision and people get excited about it and join you and things start to happen that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't had that vision and communicated it and invited others to play. So any comments about that?
I think for me, this is Diane, one of my joys is seeing others envision their own dreams and work towards them, as well as my own, of course. But it's especially wonderful when others, when you watch them opening up to the possibility that they could be an edgewalker also.
Yeah. So being able to touch others and inspire others and take joy in their unfolding, even if you weren't the one who contributed to that, but just the joy of someone else being able to follow their path.
Exactly, because you do get joy from seeing someone else find their own.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's almost like more joy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think for me it also, seeing someone like that inspires me to continue on my path and to keep on keeping on.
Judy, this is Tom again.
Yeah.
An analogy that I often use is that very often, a really powerful vision of something, in your story, this powerful vision of a peaceful planet based on this philosophy, it can be like the current coming directly out of a hydroelectric power plant or something. And if we try to grab it, it could kill us.
Yeah.
And so in order to use that power, we have to have a series of step down transformers.
Mm.
And the typical, without overgeneralizing, kind of the typical business audience that we usually find ourselves in is several transformer stations downstream from that hydroelectric power plant. And so one of the biggest challenges, I think, for those of us who are kind of in this space is that it feels really nice to be with folks that think like we do and kind of experience these sorts of states and visions and all. The real challenge, though, is the translation.
And I think that's what Mary was asking about earlier, too. Yeah. How we communicate that vision in a way that people will respond to and get involved in. And in a business sense, buy our services or donate to our causes or take action that's an exchange that supports what we're doing. So what have you learned about the stepping down? I love that metaphor of the transformer and stepping it down. What have you learned about ways to do that?
Well, and I learned it through a lot of pain in myself for being looked at very strangely and from things that I've shared. And so what I've learned to do is to be be more of an active listener and an observer, and without trying to peg somebody or to try to figure out where are they and what would be one step kind of between where they are now and their way of thinking or seeing things and this big huge vision that I'm thinking of. What would be a step? And start there. Just a silly example. If you're working in an office that keeps plastic bottled water in the refrigerator, rather than coming in and telling everybody that the world is going to end because of all the plastic in the ocean and we got to just, hey, why don't we just have a water cooler and let's stop using, one step as an example.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a silly little example, but it's the kind of thing that sometimes if you come in, with too big a vision, people don't know how to get a hold of it and you just kind of end up being thought of as a weirdo. So. Which is mostly
laughing.
True, too.
Thank goodness for the weirdos. We're the ones that change the world. But not if we're too far over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
Yeah, this is Molly again. One of the things that agree with in what you said was that when you get this through listening and observing, but the more
Molly, could you speak up a little?
Sure. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. The more carefully you observe sort of the quote unquote reality of a society's or a person's or a group's current way of existing, then it seems like it's easier, and you have your vision in mind, but then it's easier to envision an intermediate step.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times it's easy to skip over being a careful observer. And clearly we don't want to get bogged down in the mire, okay? But, you know, with John Wesley, for example, you could say he was a visionary, but what he saw was a lot of people who were very lonely. And he saw a lot of people, you know, in need in a variety of ways because their lives had changed so much. And so he provided an intermediate step of a, they had lost their rural communities. They had moved in en masse to the cities. They were there lonely and sometimes not in the best working conditions. And so, you know, so then he provided community as, a step. And so, I don't know, to me, there was careful observation.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped, you know, move toward the vision.
So what I'm getting from this and from what Mary said earlier is that one of the key skills, perhaps, is or things to do is to ask yourself, what's missing that I could provide? And that might be, you know, we're talking about it in a community way or in, for the community, whatever that community is. But that also might be for individual people who are seeking a vision, and maybe a question they could ask themselves, or all of us should ask from time to time, is what's missing that I could provide, even, you know, I could provide for myself, what's missing?
That, you know, in a way, wasn't that what Hitler did? I mean, Hitler was really visionary.
Uh-huh.
And we, of course, don't, in hindsight, agree with his vision. But he struck a chord.
Or his
somewhere.
Method. Yeah, right.
You know, he saw people unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of lost. And lacking hope. And he gave them hope.
So he had a vision of a better world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The methods were something that will go down in history as one of the most horrific things that's ever happened.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, one of the things we've been talking about is, I mean, I think we've been implying that being a visionary is always a good thing. I mean, as it were. But I think also as visionaries, being also grounded in being honest might help us listen to whether this is really a good thing better.
Yeah, and a basic principle is, does it enhance life?
Yes.
Yeah, does this vision enhance life or hurt life? Like Osama bin Laden was definitely a visionary.
Right.
Yeah, we're celebrating the, I don't know if it's celebrating, we're remembering the anniversary of his death. And, yeah, he was a visionary. And again, like Hitler, not one that enhanced life, but, you know, somewhere in that was, there's somewhere in everything is always something healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it may get twisted and cause harm, but the human, if we believe humans are evolving, that there's always something that wants to be expressed that's good. Well, we have come to the end of our hour. It's gone so quickly. And before we close the call, first of all, I want to thank you all so much for being on the call and being involved. And it's quite a rich conversation. Does anyone have a suggestion for a topic or a question for next month? I don't believe that I had pre-planned one. The website and see. Before I say that, just chat.
You know,
a lot of times,
these, yeah.
This is Fran.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking as I was taking notes, I mean, I live in the community and we have a spiritual life committee meeting tomorrow. And we're also involved in the Occupy movement. We call our group Highlands 99. And it occurred to me, what is the spiritual dimension of that movement?
That was actually our topic on February 23rd.
Oh.
So we did talk about that. And it may have been, I don't know if it was you or someone else who suggested that.
So funny.
The topics we've had are indigenous wisdom, transformation, corporate shamanism, the Occupy movement, planting seeds, and this time Edgewalkers as visionaries. Our next call is on May 24th. You know, let me just toss this one out. Thinking of Molly, Molly's my inspiration for this possible topic. Molly is involved in the Course in Miracles, and there's actually a conference in Lourdes a year from now that's about the about miracles and management. I'm going to be submitting a paper to that. And I'd love to talk about miracles and what miracles are and how they've shown up in our lives and what's it life like to live life as a miracle, some questions like that, if that would be of interest to you. And that would also might help me in figure out what I want to write for my paper. It would be selfish. But
or just research
that,
subjects.
That's great. That sounds like a win-win.
Will that work for everybody then?
Sure.
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 Okay. Wonderful. Well, the call is on May 24th, and I will send out a reminder through the Edgewalker newsletter. If you're not on the newsletter and want to be, I assume you're on the newsletter because you've called in, and I think that's the only way people know about the call. If you're not getting the Edgewalker newsletter, do let me know.
Do you send it out the same day, Judy?
Can I send you what?
Did you send it out the same day? It looked like it came today.
I send it out usually 2 or 3 weeks in advance, and then I send it out the same day as well, or the day before.
Okay, I'm not sure I got the previous one. Okay, great. Thank you.
I try to send it out at least two times, you know, way in advance and then
Okay,
you know, shortly before. Okay.
Is it a hard copy or a... an email.
No, it's an email copy.
An email, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
No, I'd like to end with a quote from a futurist and philosopher by the name of John Shar. He says, "The future is not a result of choices among alternative paths offered by the present, but a place that's created. Created first in the mind and will, created next in activity. The future is not some place we are going to, but one we are creating. The paths are not to be found, but made, and the activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination."
That's lovely.
Very nice.
Beautiful.
Will you put that in the newsletter?
Yeah, I'll put both, all three quotes, because... who was it that just sent me the quote? Wendy. Wendy just thought, yeah, so I'll put all those quotes in the newsletter.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.